It's now 2 o'clock on Wednesday, June 13th, and this is Captain Rick reporting. The first article in the Decatur Herald and Review is entitled, Hungry for Talent, by Valerie Wells. School officials looking to fill primary teacher spots, Decatur. Christy Gennari thought she wanted to study interior design and went to Virginia Polytech Institute with that in mind. I realized when I had kids that I just loved working with children, said Gennari of Monticello, now a student at Millikan University in the PACE program, and mom to 3 children ages 10, 9, and 8. They say you never work a day in your life if you're doing what you love. And so when we moved to Illinois, I decided I just had to do it. Gennari is entering a field that is hungry for new talent. Increased funding for early childhood education in the new state budget means that school districts have more jobs to fill, but not enough qualified teachers to fill them, said Claudia Quigg, founder of Baby Talk and a member of the Early Childhood Program faculty at Millikan University for 21 years. It's a degree that is in high demand and will only be higher demand, Quigg said. Early childhood education is set to receive $50 million in additional funding, with the money up by $200 million since 2015 under the most recent state budget. That $200 million overall increase proves that early childhood education is important and valued and recognized, said Christy Magulis, director of the School of Education at Millikan. If we can educate young children appropriately in the way they need to learn at a young age, it sets them up for success. This young age is exactly where we need teachers and for students to consider early childhood as a major so we can get really qualified people into those roles. Gennari chose early childhood because the curriculum is play-based and preschool, kindergarten, and first grade is her favorite age group to teach. I like the idea that children learn from the environment they're in and get to pursue their own interests, she said. Some experts say that the thinking young children are doing in their first few years of life is more complex than what graduate-level university students are doing. Graduate students are processing information, but young children are actually creating the systems for processing information, Quigg said. Brain research is showing that the years up to age 3, particularly, are crucial in terms of development, said Associate Professor Georgette Page, also of Millikan. It's not only the amount that children learn in those years, it's actual pathways and brain formation that result from what they're learning. Quigg said that more and more a bachelor's degree is required to work in early education, and that the good news is that salaries are also rising in response. Early childhood teachers used to be lucky to make minimum wage, and now the pre-K teacher makes the same as a high school biology teacher, Quigg said. These positions are now recognized as professional educator positions. Illinois law requires an early childhood teacher to have a degree in that field and licenses educators to teach children birth to age 8. In early childhood, the teacher is the primary budget item, and it's labor intensive because one teacher can teach 100 children, Quigg said. So anytime there is an increase, it's mostly about jobs. Already at Baby Talk Early Head Start, we have an opportunity to expand a couple of years ago and had to turn it down because we couldn't find enough certified teachers. A common misconception about early childhood education is that it's babysitting, Page said, and another is that it's pushing kids into academics before they're ready. That isn't the case at all, she said. That belief is one of my biggest pet peeves, she said. It's tapping into their interests and development stage so we can take them individually, culturally, and developmentally. In early childhood, we stress best practices, and we introduce many different approaches. Millikan students in the early childhood education program graduate with a variety of certifications, including a letter of approval in early childhood special education and English as a second language. They can take an additional internship for certification as a developmental therapist and are certified to teach birth through second grade. Parents are sometimes reluctant when their son or daughter wants to major in education, especially in early childhood education, due to budget issues in the state and unease about job security, Mangulis said. We can point to this funding increase and say, our state understands the value and importance of working with young children and families to help them progress to where they need to be successful, she said. A picture is contained in that article with a little girl jumping up into the air. She's barefoot and her arms are spread in a V and she's got a big smile on her face. In the background is a teacher helping a toddler navigate across the floor. The caption reads, London Hardy, 4, and Jaden Riley, 18 months, sing with teacher Susan Woods during music time in the Baby Talk Family Literacy Summer Program at Central Christian Church on Tuesday morning. Early childhood education received $50 million more in this year's state budget. Despite rain, Hickory Point ready for tourney, by Justin Kahn, Forsyth. Fortunately for the organizers of the Forsyth Classic and the Symetra Tour golfers, Hickory Point Golf Course was thirsty. Rain over the weekend, heavy storms on Monday, and more rain Tuesday morning, totaling 2.5 inches, conjured memories of 2015, when the final 2 days of the tournament were canceled because the course flooded. But by the time Symetra Tour golfers began rolling in on Tuesday for their practice rounds, in preparation of the 34th edition of the tournament, which begins Friday, the course was ready to play. As dry as it's been, we were due for a good soak, Hickory Point Ground Superintendent Greg Foley said. And it didn't all come at once, so it gave it a little opportunity for some of it to sink in. Most of the course pretty well soaked it up. I could throw all the water I wanted on it in the week before, and it still kept getting drier. So a good soak was a blessing. Tournament director Cindy Diedrich Wolfer was running around Hickory Point on a Tuesday, making sure everything was ready for the partee, spelled PAR-TEE, that evening, where the public gets a chance to mix with the golfers, and making sure golfers and tour staff have everything they need. But her biggest concern remained the one thing over which she had no control, the weather. I'm always worried about the weather, Diedrich Wolfer said. There's a lot of planning that goes into this, but weather can mess everything up in a hurry. So far, the weather hasn't affected much. Staff had to wait until Tuesday afternoon before parking on the grounds, and players had to wait around more than an hour longer than expected to begin practice. But with high temps, mostly sunny skies, and a slight breeze in the forecast for the rest of the week, Foley said conditions are shaping up to be near ideals. The course has been getting crispy around the edges. So this rain really perked it up, Foley said. And if it rained more, we could take it. I'd rather it not, and the players prefer if it's dry, but there's no danger of the creek flooding. It would take an extensive amount of rain for that to happen. And looking at the forecast, we're coming into more stable weather. Right now, the course isn't as firm as what the players prefer. It's damp enough and it's going to knock down driving distance a little. But on the other hand side, greens are going to hold. And with a couple more sunny days and some wind, it should firm. Conditions should be good for scoring. Foley and Diedrich Wolfer said the days leading up to the tournament can be stressful, but their experience helps. After 34 years, we pretty much have a lot of it down, Diedrich Wolfer said. There is, though, a change many previous attendees of the tournament will notice. Before this year, there were three places where lunch was served: the pavilion and skybox for fans and volunteers, and the clubhouse for players. Now, all food will be served out of the clubhouse. No matter what credential you have, all the food is in one location, Diedrich Wolfer said. Then people can either eat in the clubhouse, take it out to the pavilion, or in the skybox. That will streamline things. Before, we've had people in the skybox saying, "We want the brat you have in the pavilion," and people in the pavilion saying, "We want the chicken you have in the skybox." This will make it easier for everyone. Forsyth Classic. When? Friday through Sunday. Where? Hickory Point Golf Course. Of note, the Forsyth Classic is the longest running tournament on the LPGA Symetra Tour and the third longest running women's golf tournament. This year, the tournament will feature a purse of $130,000. U.S. gun debate remains heated. Congressmen recall last year's shooting at baseball practice by Kelsey Landis of the Belleville News Democrat. Belleville. Since an Illinois man opened fire on a congregational baseball game practice nearly a year ago, disrespectful rhetoric on the nation's stage is still too prevalent, local businessmen said as they reflected on the shooting. James T. Hodrickson's anti-Republican views are well known among acquaintances, but no one could foresee that he would travel to Alexandria, Virginia, with a 7.62 caliber rifle and a 9mm handgun. Those were the legally purchased weapons he used to shoot at congressmen, staffers, and police at the ballpark. U.S. Representative Mike Boss, a Republican from Murfreesboro, was not on the field that day, but his office had previously received a list, at least 9 letters from Hodgkinson. Maybe the groups that protest outside my office know where the line is. Public protest is your First Amendment right, Boss said. Some people, hopefully very few, listen to the comments that are made and take them to that next extreme. People at the park on June 14, 2017, credit local and U.S. Capitol Police for preventing Hodgkinson from killing anyone. U.S. Representative Steve Scalise was badly injured, though he later returned to work after multiple surgeries and months of recovery. Hodgkinson died of a gunshot wound after police returned fire. The assault came amid a nationwide tumult of protests and aggressive rhetoric surrounding GOP efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Tensions were still high more than 6 months after the election of President Donald Trump, which sparked months of protests in the U.S. and abroad. The hate that Trump has been elected, protesters were in the streets at every district office, Boss said. They were very, very, very active. Some blame the political left for drumming up tensions so far as to incite Hodgkinson's attack. But the message from lawmakers was clear. Americans should set aside their differences and strive for more respectful rhetoric. Since then, a nationwide debate on gun control erupted, and rhetoric became marked by high-profile name-calling matches, leading some to question if this is the new norm in American public discourse. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville, was on the field when Hodgkinson opened fire. Davis was one of the politicians who called for a more respectful rhetoric in the nation following the attack. One of the moments I remember most about that day is coming to the House floor at the same time Speaker Paul Ryan and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi gave their great speeches, Davis said. People were coming up after they were done almost in tears, saying they were trying to get a hold of me. That's what people don't see about Congress, about government. They don't see that we actually like each other. Despite congeniality among congressmen, Davis says, the country still hasn't come far enough in healing relations. I had hoped for more in the last year in moving forward, in getting the hate and vitriol out of politics and the political debate, Davis said. Boss said, it's sad to see personal attacks unfold on the national stage. I can argue and debate a bill passionately on the floor and that evening go out to dinner with that person I debated with, Boss said. It's sad to see whoever is doing it making personal attacks. I understand being passionate about an issue, but when you start to make it personal, if you ever start making it personal, you lose the debate. But for some reason, there are certain people who feel emboldened. They're so used to being on social media and feel like they can say whatever they want, Boss added. Davis called for renewed effort for Americans to set aside their differences. Obviously, with the hate, the vitriol, the rhetoric we see in political debate in society today, it's going to take us all to come together and say that this has to stop, Davis said. The country continues to struggle with a debate over gun control, one that still divides members of Congress. After the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, Davis said political and law enforcement leaders need to tighten security at schools and do more to prevent mentally disturbed individuals from getting weapons. As someone who has survived, when you hear about a Parkland and a Santa Fe high school in Texas, my immediate reaction is reliving the terrifying 10 minutes I spent that morning dodging bullets from a madman I didn't know from Belleville, Davis said. My heart goes out to those kids who were there who survived because they're going to wake up every morning with the same fears, the same triggers that led me immediately going back to that morning, the sounds, even the smells, and really the fears. And it breaks my heart to know that young kids are going to have to live through the memories, same that I have to. Since the shooting and even through the gun control debate, Boss said he hopes that nationwide unrest has relaxed at least a little bit. I would like to say that everyone has calmed down, but there are some that are going to be what their personalities are, Boss said. The real issue is that somebody who had mental health issues picked up on an anger and runs with that. He, Hodgkinson, specifically planned, had the intention to do that. Rosa Parks items to be unveiled. Part of museum's Juneteenth celebration by Allison Petty. Decatur. Artifacts connected to civil rights icon Rosa Parks are coming to the African American Cultural and Genealogical Society of Illinois, with a Saturday unveiling that coincides with the organization's annual Juneteenth celebration. Juneteenth is spelled Juneteenth. This year marks the 25th anniversary for the group. Founder Evelyn Hood said, "One of the major fundraisers is a banquet for the Juneteenth holiday, which celebrates the abolition of slavery in the United States, news of which finally reached Texas on June 19, 1865. This year's event kicks off with a silent auction at 6 p.m. Friday, followed by the gala at 6:30 p.m. at the Heartland Grand Palace, 3253 North Brush College Road. To buy tickets, visit AfricanAmericanCultural.org, the Decatur office, 235 West El Dorado Street, from noon to 5 p.m. today, or call 217-429-7458. Hood said people should RSVP for the banquet by Thursday. Featured speaker at the banquet is Ollie Ligon, a graduate of Stephen Decatur High School, who went on to attend Harvard Law School. Ligon now lives in Roswell, Georgia. The open house from 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday it will be at the museum. The event is free. Hood announced last year that at least one item of historical significance from the Rosa Parks collection would be shipped to the museum from the Library of Congress for permanent display. The gift has been made possible by Macon County Sheriff Howard Buffett, who bought a collection of more than 1,000 items from Parks Estate in 2014 for $4.5 million. That collection is on loan to the Library of Congress until 2024. Police ID Murder Suspect by Tony Reed. Decatur. Police on Tuesday said a murder arrest warrant has been issued for a suspect in the shooting death of Bernard Norville of Decatur. In a news release, the Decatur Police Department said Alexander L. Bowie, 26, is wanted on a preliminary charge of first-degree murder. Bowie is described as 6 feet tall and weighing 155 pounds. Police said Bowie is considered to be armed and dangerous. Police said Norville, 35, was shot about 12:45 a.m. June 3rd at 447 East Stewart Avenue. Norville was rushed to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 1:23 a.m. Detectives have been working the case with search warrants and numerous interviews. Police were called back to the house to investigate after the home was damaged by a fire on Sunday. The Decatur Fire Department said the house was unoccupied at the time of the fire, which was being investigated as an arson. Anyone with information about the shooting or the whereabouts of Bowie is asked to call Decatur Police at 217-424-2711 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Gun Sanctuary Vote Set. Shelby Board to Consider Measure Today. By the Herald and Review News Service. Shelbyville. The Shelby County Board is expected to consider today a measure similar to a gun sanctuary proposal approved first in Effingham and then in dozens of other counties so far across the state. The board meets at 9 a.m. in the courthouse in Shelbyville. The seventh item on the agenda states, Chairman David Cruett, reaffirmation of Resolution 2003-21 in support of Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The word sanctuary, often associated with the policy used to protect immigrants from deportation, in certain cities across the nation, has been embraced by a growing number of rural Illinois counties intent on protecting gun rights. The Democrat-led state legislature has considered a series of gun control measures, including a ban on bump stocks and an age restriction on select firearms, and local gun owners and supporters are taking notice. One by one, many counties across the state are passing resolutions declaring themselves sanctuaries for gun owners, meaning they might not enforce gun control measures passed by state lawmakers that the county deems in interference with the Second Amendment. Largely symbolic in nature, these resolutions are serving to send a message to Springfield on what downstate people think of the proposed gun control legislation. This week, both Shelby and Clark counties could be among those to become sanctuaries for gun ownership. The Shelby County Board started looking into the idea after its May meeting, at which one Shelby County resident, John Warren, requested that members consider joining the list of counties that have declared themselves sanctuary counties. "Our general assemblies are wanting to regulate, regulate, regulate," Warren has said. We need to, somewhere as a community, say enough is enough. "Gun rights are critical for a large part of the country," he said. "Shelby has a significant participation in shooting sports and youth gun clubs," Warren said. Cruitt said last month that the request was turned over to the Law Enforcement and Legislative Committee of the County Board. Clark County Board members also are expected to vote on a similar resolution after their meeting Friday in Marshall. Decatur Council meets in closed session, by Tom Lisi. Decatur. The Decatur City Council convened for a closed session Tuesday night to undergo a training related to goal setting and self-evaluation. "We were looking at the way we do things now. What should we be doing better, and really looking at where we can improve," said Mayor Julie Wolf after the training. The training was conducted by Brad Cole, the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. "It's a good opportunity for the council to get together and talk about these matters of self-evaluations, look at the future, and how they can work together," Cole said. The Municipal League is an industry organization that lobbies lawmakers on behalf of local municipalities in Illinois. Under Illinois law, local government councils and boards must cite the reason that they are deliberating away from public view. Typical reasons include personnel matters and contract negotiations. On May 17th, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf testified alongside Cole in Springfield, asking state legislators to reconsider budget cuts impacting municipal governments. The enacted budget ending up keeping the costs of the cuts in place, but at lower levels. Lawmakers decreased a cut to the state's local government distributive fund from 10% to 5% and dropped a sales tax collection fee added in 2017 from 2% to 1.5%. "There's certainty now. We know what's coming out of Springfield," said Decatur City Manager Tim Gleason after the budget plan passed the General Assembly. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, June 13th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with part two after the break.